This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. We have reported before on the issue of doctor shortages, especially in already underserved areas like the inner city. Many efforts are underway to attract new doctors to practice in these places, efforts like UW's Triumph program, training in urban medicine and public health.
But recruiting new doctors is only part of the equation. Another part is retaining the ones already in practice. There are studies that show more than 60% of family practice physicians in general experience burnout symptoms, and the numbers are even higher when you look at doctors working in underserved areas.
Several Milwaukee doctors are trying to get to the root of what causes some doctors to leave the profession and what keeps others motivated to stay. Doctors Ann Getson and Shersty Knox are physicians with Aurora Family Medicine's residency program, and Deb Simpson is director of the medical education programs for Aurora Healthcare. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So we've heard about the dearth of physicians, or at least the significant shortage of physicians in underserved urban areas. How does physician retention compare to the challenges in attracting new physicians to serve these communities in the first place?
They're both challenges. I think that there are a lot of people who are well-intentioned and excited, and it's very meaningful for them to practice in underserved settings. And then we get out there, and it's hard. And burnout is intense across all fields of specialties, but I think it's particularly concentrated in underserved settings because of the unique obstacles that are faced. And so that was obviously one of the questions that we looked at in wanting to do our research about what keeps physicians in underserved settings going, because there are people who are doing it and feel sustained and resilient and find true meaning in what they're doing, and they keep going. So what is it about them that allows us to keep going? And so then how do we train those residents and trainees to develop those skills so they can keep following that goal and that purpose of why they went into medicine in the first place?
So when it comes to retention, how do you go about studying then how the factors that go into some people choosing to stay and some people choosing to leave, or choosing to stay but still feeling burned out?
Well, at least the approach that we took in our study, we wanted to identify people who were successful in staying. We had a minimum number of years that they had to be in practice, a minimum amount of clinical work strictly, to try to really focus on these are the docs who are in the community every day and they've stuck it out for X amount of time. So we tried to narrow it down and got referrals in there. And then we sat down, found those doctors who said, yep, I do feel pretty good about my position. And we sat down and had interviews with them about what is it that keeps you going.
Well, and so let me ask you this. Yeah. What is it that keeps them going?
Yes. Like many complex phenomenon, it's multifactorial. There are a lot of different components. And when we sat back and looked at all of the information, maybe being physicians, we're naturally inclined to break it down anatomically. So we looked at some kind of external foundational elements, basically being the legs of a person holding you up, that you have support from the healthcare system you're working in, you work within a functional team, you have good work-life balance. But some of the other critical components, the heart of it, why did you go into medicine? A lot of times social justice or health equity and working towards those goals is critically important for these doctors. And there were also some really interesting components of the brain part of it, cognitive processing, reframing challenges as rewarding, and developing resiliency through those kinds of approaches were also really important. And then finally, we kind of identified a specific skill set or toolbox that you can use that help you work with specific populations that have higher rates of distrust of the healthcare system, lower health literacy, and other major social determinants of health.
How do these kinds of answers jibe with the your own kind of lived experiences in the field?
I would say that they're very congruent, that having that purpose and that meaning of why you're doing your job every day is a really, really important driving factor. And it's important to be around other people that share that with you and that help sustain that piece, as well as being able to find victories where it might initially appear as though there aren't any. So sometimes it's even as simple as a difficult patient case saying, well, they came to me today. They did come to clinic and I was able to talk with them and maybe we'll work on making more concrete next steps in a treatment plan or identifying solutions to whatever problem you're facing with them. But even just saying they showed up in clinic, that's the first step. And being able to frame your experience in clinic in that positive way.
Kjersti and I are both graduates of the Triumph program. And so we benefited from the experience of having a community of people who share that passion and share those values with you as you go through your medical training. And that was hugely beneficial for me in my development as a physician to connect with people who saw it and shared that excitement and also were there to help kind of buoy you as those harder times inevitably come as well. I did want to bring up a quote because I think it really illustrates what some of the challenges are. Rachel Remen is a physician who works a lot in humanism in medicine. And we talk about humanism rounds as a way to connect and with each other as colleagues and find meaning in medicine. And she talks, one of her quotes is the expectation that we can be immersed in suffering and loss daily and not be touched by it is as unrealistic as expecting to be able to walk through water without getting wet. We face tremendous grief and challenges as well as sharing a lot of joy with our patients. And I think that community helps us keep that heart lit and going forward.
Well, and so not everyone obviously practicing in a setting like this has gone through a program like Triumph. And so, you know, the various aspects of the toolkit that you talk about might not have been mm-hmm. part of their training. What are the implications of this research for people who are mid-career, even early career, but who might not come into the field with this kind of background that a training in urban medicine would have given them?
I think that's one of the challenges that many, in fact, of our residents, particularly at Aurora St. Luke's and Aurora Sinai face, because the challenges of those populations are also difficult, whether you're in family medicine or obstetrics or radiology. They all feel that same pressure. The critical part is that I think nationally there is recognition that all physicians are being challenged by these elements, and there are starting to be requirements to incorporate things like how do you support patients and yourselves around health disparities? How do you work with patients who have transportation challenges? Curriculum that have been established, and that's part of what I work on. Kjersti's just published an article on a wonderful longitudinal curriculum to train all residents in family medicine that supports them in a longitudinal fashion, not just a week and a lecture here and a topic there.
Mm-hmm. Is there a certain – I don't know if the term cyclical is right, but is there a certain cyclical aspect to this that, you know, the nature of the physician shortage exacerbates these circumstances that make it, you know, more difficult to keep people? Like the idea that there are already fewer people in the field, which puts more pressure on the people who are in the field, which in turn makes more people want to leave the field.
I think that very much can be the case, and I think it goes back to what Anne already said about the importance of the cohort, about being with a group of people or feeling that you have that support of people doing this with you, walking this with you, so that you aren't feeling like you're the only one responsible for solving what you see or what you hear from your patients. And I know from my perspective working in the clinic that knowing that I have community partners, that I have clinic partners, that I have system partners that are all looking at these various challenges from different perspectives helps me feel like I'm not alone and that I can keep going forward. And that's one of the things we really try to also instill in the students and in the residents as we're teaching.
I think we are in a time in healthcare that's a crisis that everyone writes about. But if you look at the notion of electronic health records, for example, information technology, that is taking physicians away from the thing that supports their meaning, which is the direct contact with patients and or their team members. So you IM an instant message your team member instead of talking with them for that moral support. There's a distancing effect along with all the other healthcare challenges about lack of reimbursement, the incentives they all have to do, the number of throughputs versus caring for populations. Those are not cyclic. That's a current state of our healthcare situation that is exacerbating physicians' commitment to their practices.
I don't think it's the physician shortage in and of itself that causes more physicians shortage. It's those systemic factors that are creating this crucible where family physicians, primary care docs, and physicians across the board are struggling and suffering and having burnout. And then that decreases the desire to go into those fields. You look at family docs, and the majority of them don't want their children to follow that career path. And I think that's an alarming statistic.
And that has not always been the case, right? I mean, you hear a lot about physicians who are the children of other physicians.
Absolutely.
Well, what was the biggest eye-opener for you as you conducted these interviews?
I think one of the more exciting threads that we pulled out of this that we can keep following is thinking about the concept of developing skills in cognitive reframing. How do we approach the stressors that are happening? We're not going to fix the system immediately. It's going to take time to make that better. So what do we do with ourselves in the meantime? Historically, the wellness conversation has been take better care of yourself, get more sleep, eat more healthily. But that's challenging because that's still putting it on the individual physician. You're just not doing well enough taking care of yourself and making yourself well. And so identifying that there are specific skills like reframing cognitive techniques, seeing your values through the lens of the stressors you're facing, or practicing mindfulness meditation to help break the physiologic stress response that you're having are really exciting paths that we can follow to enhance and grow and train our resilience as doctors.
A very concrete example came from one of your interviews, which was a very complex patient with lack of resources, no income, no medication abilities. And that's the cognitive reframing that Anne is talking about, the complexity of, so I can't use the normal things in my toolkit. What can I do with this patient that will help them towards better care? And it's that ability to say, oh, that complexity is what drives me and I'm good at it. And when I find a solution is meaningful. She came back and was all sparked and, and ignited after that interview because that was it.
It's interesting. Of course, the message to physicians here is not necessarily that different than the message the physicians are taking to their patients in taking better care of themselves.
Oh, absolutely. And I think you're hitting on a very important point that we need to create a philosophy and approach of wellness for our patients and our providers and our physicians and caretakers. And we're not so different from our patients.
Your point is well taken. It is exactly a national phenomenon. The Institute of Medicine, now renamed the National Academies of Medicine, has a national focus now on resiliency and well-being across all the healthcare professions. And it's two issues. It's the personal side, all those skill sets that we've been talking about, and it's the how do we change the systems in which people work, which is going to take some time.
There's also great examples from community engagement literature or methodology that I think we can apply to ourselves. And that's certainly one of the things that we try to do with the Triumph students is help to teach them both how they apply some of these processes to both their when engaging with communities and community projects as well as with themselves. And those are things like something that's called asset-based community development, where you're really, rather than focusing on the deficits in an area, you're focusing on what are the resources you have there and how can you lift those up and enhance those? So another way to think about that is rather than saying the cup is half empty, it's half full. And then how do you fill it more, basically? And then the other thing that we teach, and also I found it personally very helpful in my own practice, has been something that we learned with a training from the Milwaukee Public Allies, which is a technique called celebration, discovery, intention, and action. And in that, you're looking at whatever your project is or your goal and saying, okay, what's gone really well? What can I celebrate here? What have I learned in this process? And probably there's something a little bit uncomfortable in that. And what do I intend? What do I want to change about that? And what's the actual action that I'm going to take to reach that goal? And I think that personally, as a Triumph student, that was one of those were both two of the best lessons I walked away with. And those are certainly things we continue to try to teach the residents as well as the students.
Yeah, we are part of a national organization called the Alliance of Independent Academic Medical Centers. And that has 30 organizations like Aurora Healthcare throughout the country with residency programs that are all participating in how do you design initiatives to support well-being and resilience among physicians. And we have four teams, family medicine, internal medicine, OBGYN, and radiology, who are all part of this larger national community. And what they attest is coming together even in their own teams locally and then going to nationally and finding others creates this kind of community of practice of a shared esprit de corps.
It strikes me that it sounds like a very, very much a glass is half full kind of study. You were looking at what causes people to stay and not specifically at what causes people to leave.
Yes. That was one of the questions I had with Deb early on before we did this study was we talk about burnout, loss of retention, lack of recruitment. And I was saying, but where is our asset-based community development? Where are our positive factors that help us identify what does work? And it was exactly with that intention that we kind of set out on doing this study.
Well, Ann Getson and Sherstie Knox and Deb Simpson, thank you all so much for your time. And again, best of luck in your work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ann Getson and Sherstie Knox are physicians with the Aurora Family Medicine Residency Program, and Deb Simpson is director of the Medical Education Program for Aurora Healthcare.
Getson and Simpson authored an article on sustaining family physicians in urban underserved settings that appeared in the Journal of the Society of Teachers of Family Medicine. You'll find a link at wuwn.com.